Welcome to the Tripod. We break down the NRL every game, every week from a punting perspective. I'm Jacob Wynn, and the 2022 season is in the books. The Panthers are the champions. I did a live grand final recap on Sunday. We're going to talk more about the grand final from a bookie perspective today because I've got Tristan for a special episode tonight. We're going to talk NRL highlights and lowlights of the season as well, and then your questions. This episode tonight is part one of Ask Tristan Anything, and that's right, I had to split it into two parts. You guys sent me so many questions. We tackled all of them. We spoke for 2 hours, so this is going to be the first part, and I'm going to be honest with you as well to set the table. Some of the information Tristan shares in this chat is pretty bleak. I know you're thinking nobody's going to cry for the bookies, but I really think this was a necessary conversation because a lot of people will find it eye-opening and genuinely concerning. But most importantly, I hope it gives people a good understanding of the current state of the industry and challenges from the bookie perspective. Now, the questions that were thrown at Tristan range from NRL, people want to know about mixed matchup, cap stake, promo, fair use policy, very hot topic for Tripod followers. Questions about the industry, changes, fees, taxes, operating costs for people to understand. And also questions just about how odds work and market creation and new features in the works and questions about features and future plans. So heaps of questions thrown at Tristan today, as I said, which is why I had to split it into two parts. The second part will be out tomorrow night, so just 24 hours from now, and that'll get you in the routine of Thursday for Tripod shows, because the Rugby League World Cup weekly preview show we plan to do weekly on Thursday night, starting with next week, which will preview the whole World Cup as well as the opening round of games. But anyway, let's jump straight into this chat with Tristan for Ask Tristan Anything.
We've got so much to cover. Thank you to everyone who sent in all these questions. There's plenty of people that want to grill you. I can say there's some friendly questions and there's also some confronting ones as well. So we've got cover the whole bag, but we're actually going to talk about the grand final first of all, because we haven't got your bookie recap on how you guys did with that one.
Yeah, g'day, Jacob. Thanks for having us. And yeah, definitely. Thanks for everyone that's fired through a question. We're always happy to answer them, and no dramas there. And yeah, the NRL Grand Final was very much a one-sided affair. Obviously, Penrith way too good. They timed their run perfectly. It was very, very well coached by Ivan Cleary. The market was, it moved from eight. So we initially put the market up at about $1.39, $3.10, something in that sort of ballpark, immediately after the Bunnies game, when I thought there might have been some doubt over Kikau and potentially Luai with potential suspension. So we sort of erred on that side. And obviously, very early in the week, they got off. So that did see Penrith firm up a little bit, but that was more so not necessarily weight of money. That was just us realigning our position on the game. So I think they got into around about $1.33, $1.34 at jump time. The line went from 8 to 8.5, again, predominantly for that reason. Now, early on in the day, there was a good push for the minus. And then as we got a bit deeper into the day, there was a little push back for the plus. So from that end, it was reasonably balanced. There was certainly more money for the Panthers, which you'd expect at the minus, but there certainly was some support for the plus, which was good. So from our perspective, we had a nice book where, from whenever you can take a game on match day and you don't need to move the line too much, then that's when, from our perspective, you get money both ways at the decent sort of margin. But the punters came for a few of the other options. Obviously, when you get a lopsided game like that, your anytime try scorers, when punters throw in all the Panthers players, that can add up. Fortunately, from our perspective, Mike Acevo didn't score, so that was one that did save us a little bit. But probably the biggest go of the grand final out of all of the markets was Dylan Edwards getting the Clive Churchill. He was absolutely smashed. I think he was maybe $12 right at the start of the week, and then we just kept laying him, and he got into $6.50 at the death, which was a very sustained go. That was our worst result by a significant margin out of the entirety of the game. It was last year as well. We laid Cleary quite significantly. And yeah, I guess maybe, they were like, Edwards was a worthy winner, and you certainly can't complain in that sense. I guess maybe the logic from the move was that maybe if both of these players were quite close on the night, they might give it to someone a little bit different. So it was probably a smart bet and a smart bit of action in hindsight, because the market was very, very wide between the two of them when we first opened betting. But certainly at jump time, it wasn't. It was a lot tighter.
Well, I'll take that as a compliment, because we were one of the places that was tipping Edwards, and $11 we got about him on the Wednesday. And yeah, with the narrative award, you know, voting subjective, I think he had that going for him, that he hadn't really received too many of the accolades, and it's a great story. And then he had the performance, and certainly how he capped that game. And I've already kind of given my own personal recap of the grand final, but I'm curious, those couple of late Eels tries, many betting implications there, that literally sent the game over right at the end from a pretty unlikely source.
Yeah, it did. And from our end, the totals was a pretty even balanced book. We opened it up and the money came for the unders initially, and then there was a late push for the overs on game day as well. It was a little bit better from us, from our perspective, in that sense, but it's always difficult to work out because it, you know, like we won a little bit on the overs options at the end of the game, but you know, a couple of extra try scorers, obviously, Arthur, you don't lay too much in those same game multis, but anytime you lay an extra try scorer, it does add up, and there was plenty of those flying around, so it was probably a net no difference from our end at the end of the game. But yeah, it certainly would have had a lot of implications for a lot of punters because, it did go overs on the back of it.
And the other thing I was going to ask you on the back of those late Eels tries too, maybe nothing major impacted you, but that actually meant that Parramatta won the second half. And I'm just wondering if anyone had like Panthers win both halves, Panthers second half line, or live betting. I imagine that a lot of people would have just been pumping into Penrith with the line that would have been ever increasing as they got off to that dream start, because a lot of us felt like if Parramatta was any chance, it had to be in the first half. And once, you know, it's 18-0 at half time. Was it one-way traffic of people playing, you know, Penrith to win by a big margin?
Yes and no. It's a little bit different because I certainly agree with you where I was completely on that same train that if Parramatta needed to, if they were going to be in the game, they were going to be in it. They needed to be in it the first half. So we certainly did lay pre-match some second half options, but in your grand final betting, it's just always a different beast to virtually any other game. So I think it was one of those ones where people that were on Penrith were pretty happy to not come again at the new option. And then there were a few punters that I think were on Penrith early in the piece, were on them at the -8.5, and they've sort of covered themselves late in the live betting. So from our end, it wasn't much of a difference. It was like I was looking at it thinking, oh, hopefully we have taken some big action here at the minus, but it was pretty balanced. It was a really, despite the blowout and obviously the scoreline got down to 16, but despite the comprehensive nature of the victory, there was still throughout the course of betting money both sides in nearly all options, which from our perspective was a good betting event.
Fair enough. Because when it was 28-0 with 20 to go, you could easily see Penrith winning that game, you know, threatening that that Manly 2008 grand final result of 40-0. And as you say, the margin ends up getting reduced to just 16 points. But the biggest talking point out of the grand final is probably where Penrith sits historically. And the craziest part of it all for me is that they're just showing no signs of really slowing down either. Like, they, what would stop them really playing in the final game of the year for a number of seasons to come? Because we saw that they were just dominant at every grade, at every age group, and they've got a young core, and people are already talking about them, you know, in a historical context. It wasn't that long ago that the Roosters won back-to-back comps, but this is back-to-back comps and also on the back of a third straight grand final. And then you got to go back to the 90s, with the Brisbane Broncos, this great Canberra Raiders sides, or do you go back to the Eels of the 80s? And I'm wondering your perspective on that from a betting point of view, and keeping in mind that you've already opened your odds for 2023, how short are Penrith versus other great teams have been in the past?
Yeah, well, Penrith's opened up for next year at $3.75, so they're very, very tight. That is one of the shortest options I can remember in recent memory. Like, you only have to look back where they were reasonably dominant last season, although towards the business end of the year, I think people sort of started to think they maybe were wobbling a little bit. So as a result, they opened up at around about the $6 mark this time last year, where they're $3.75 now. Conversely, I think the slight question marks from my end is obviously Appy Korosau moving on and Viliami Kikau moving on. Now, we've already seen Mitch Kenny cover Appy over the course of the year. Obviously, the reserve grade side winning the New South Wales Cup and the state championship, and obviously having to do it with one of those finals matches where they rested all their teams as well. So it's a phenomenal effort. They've got some players there and a lot of depth, which I'm sure in the structure they've got are going to fill up, because let's not forget this time last year they were losing Matt Burton, Paul Momorowski, Kurt Capel as well. So it's no different to last year, and they went to another level. And Nathan Cleary missed a lot of this season as well, and they were still very, very dominant. So, and I think the other thing you look at is you look at a couple of the other sides that were competitive this year, and you probably think on face value they may regress a touch next year, the Storm in particular. The Roosters looked really, really good at various times, but they have that list where there's always going to be that question mark over injuries, and if they get their full team on the paddock, they're going to be very comprehensive. And then can the Sharks and the Cowboys repeat what they did? The Eels lose a couple, and the Bunnies seem to be very contingent on a couple of star players. So you look at it and you say, well, yeah, Penrith, certainly with the youngsters coming through, they're going to be very, very hard to beat. And you get to that point, I think, as well, where obviously the salary cap is meant to level these things out, but there seems like there's, whether you agree or disagree with some of the celebration, there certainly seems to be a big camaraderie in that group. So you wonder if there will certainly be an avenue of a lot of players taking a little bit less than market value to keep the core of that team around to create a dynasty if it's not already there.
And that's a good point you make about the other challenges. Like, there's no one else really putting their hand up. So if you look back at the Roosters won back-to-back comps, but they always had that counterpart of the Melbourne Storm that would at least keep their odds in check. And then Penrith has emerged as well. I'm wondering, like, and another thing, the Roosters won the comp in 18 and 19, then Cooper Cronk retired. So they wouldn't have been as short in 2020. And I think back historically, like, you don't go that far. I think the 2017 Melbourne Storm side's one of the greatest sides I've ever seen. But again, I believe Bill retired on the back of that season. So they weren't probably seen as strong as 2018. Now, you mentioned Penrith have their losses, but the depth is phenomenal as well. Let's just talk about the season overall. I'm just interested in your reflections, kind of how you did commercially with it, your observations and memories of this year.
Yeah, we had a tricky old season, and I think our probably learning tools, which we're going to have to take into the World Cup, is that we probably found ourselves where we overcommitted a little bit on some of the lopsided games, and it's still a learning curve for us with the same game multis and the evolution of these things, where the bad results can really compound from our perspective when you get these blowouts and these high scoring games. So we actively changed tack midway through the year, where we sort of realized that we needed to elevate the totals. I don't think the market caught up with the totals probably until a couple of weeks after it should have. You know, there was a few weeks there of low scoring games, and I think maybe the mentality around the marketplace was, have the rule changes affected this? But in reality, we had some wet weather games early in the year, which I think really affected the data that was being used. So we particularly in the lopsided games made a point of trying to elevate the totals to sort of protect against some of those more lopsided results, because they were the games from our end where we really felt the damage, and it's something that we've got to work towards and learn and try to. And I think we had this similar conversation last year, you know, like we take on all of the punters early, and it's important that we're probably making our own assumptions to a quicker degree and not being as reliant on maybe what the marketplace thinks in those scenarios too. So it's something we definitely worked on and improved early and later in the year. It was something I would have liked to have caught it probably 2 or 3 weeks earlier, but it's one of those ones where you're constantly always learning in this game. With so many markets, it is difficult to manage those, you know, the wide and the variance and these sort of things. So it's just something where we've sort of sat down and we're going back to the drawing board and just trying to learn and make a few little subtle tweaks for A, the World Cup, and B, next year.
And that's the balance we've discussed in the past, that you want to react to what's happening but not overreact as well. So that's always a challenge there. Any kind of moments stick out to you? I asked, I think, like maybe your biggest wins or biggest losses throughout the year.
Yeah, there was some really enjoyable moments throughout the year. From our end, the Origin 3 was one of my favourite moments of the year. It was a really vibrant betting affair, and it was a cracking game. So from our end, that was one of the highlights. I thought week one of the football of the finals was also a great viewing spectacle. It was great turnover wise, and from our end, it was a good one. Some of the bad games, which I try to erase from the memory box, but they were some of those, the big blowouts, like the game when the Roosters put 70 odd on the Tigers. That was a disaster. The probably the last game of the year as well, where the Raiders put a big number on in the first half. That was another one where we did everything in our power to protect against a scenario like that. And it was still, and that was probably the most frustrating game of the season from my perspective personally, because I felt like we put ourselves in a position where we should have been, okay in that game. And it was just, you just can't combat the numbers, And when punters want to be on a variety of try scorers and into the minus and into the overs, and when it happens, it happens. And we were always on the top end of those lines, but they were our two worst results by a long way. The Roosters one, we probably got to put our hand up, and we didn't handle that as well as what we maybe could have. But certainly the Raiders one, you look back and say, I don't know what I could have done differently in this game. And that's probably the frustration when there's some things that are out of your control that you can't always control.
Thanks for reminding me, because we had Tigers plus 23.5 in that Roosters game. We're going to tackle some questions that have been sent to you, and the first topic is all questions that have been sent relating to the NRL. But did you have any other memories or any other things you like, overall reflections for 2022?
Unfortunately, the way the industry is shaped at the moment, the turnover model and the low margin model that we've always operated in, which I think is, it's the only way I know how to bookmake and the only way I want to bookmake, but just doesn't work at the moment. And it's such a sad indictment on the industry, and it's something where you can hold on to something just because you're wanting to do the right thing, but if the numbers don't work, the numbers don't work, and that's a realization we've come to in the last little while, and we are going to have to make a few little tweaks, and it's never fun, but I'm hoping that we can demonstrate that the wagering landscape and the industry, the bookmakers can pull a couple of levers and it can significantly change the amount of turnover that's seen in the industry. And that will reflect and will flow on to fees that are received by these governing bodies. And you shouldn't have to do that to make these changes. But unfortunately, we're going to have to try to cut our turnover in half over the next 12 months. And that's going to result in a lot of fees not being paid on the back of it, which is a frustrating thing. I just think there needs to be a balance between what's fair. We completely understand the necessity to pay our way in this game. We want to create the best product, whether it be sport or racing, in the nation, but it also needs to be sustainable. And ultimately, when you have to make these changes, there's only one person that is affected by it, and that's the punter. And that's the sad thing that we've sort of had to make a plan for over the next bit.
And that's why I appreciate you joining me. And one of the reasons we thought it would be really beneficial for people to follow along, for us to have this chat and open up questions, which will allow you to get into some specifics. You foreshadowed a fair few elements and topics of what this chat's going to be about, because there's plenty of people asking a few questions, and it's great that you're able to front up and give them an answer straight from the horse's mouth. So over 30 questions, guys. Thank you so much to everyone who did submit the questions. We'll do our very best to tackle as many as we can. Some that we don't go in as much detail in may just be because we've gone in depth before. This is the third installment of Ask Tristan Anything, and I'll put up a link or at least an image where you can find past chats that we've had on series of Wide World of Punting, and we're not doing Wide World of Punting this summer, so this is just a one-off. So some questions have been asked in the past and you got in depth, or after you listen to this, if you want more, go back and listen to the last parts of Ask Tristan Anything if you haven't listened before. But what I've done, I've been through a bunch of the questions, over 30 of them, and I've tried to categorize them. So let's jump into NRL questions, and I'll do my best to go through this. All right. Alex asks, the top five NRL players that influence the market. Who comes to mind for you?
Yeah, so probably Nathan Cleary immediately comes to mind. And I think you'll find next year that will probably be an even more enhanced. I suppose you've got Kurt Falls still sitting there in the background, but certainly Sean O'Sullivan was able to fill in admirably this year, and he won't be there next year. So it's always looking at where you lose a player and who comes in to replace them. But yeah, Nathan Cleary, a massive one. Tommy Trbojevic, obviously a huge one for Manly, and he was out of action for the vast majority of the season. Latrell Mitchell as well. He was, you saw the way Souths are two different sides when he was on the park and when he wasn't. And you've got the Melbourne combination of, I'd imagine Cam Munster probably comes to mind when you think of Melbourne, but I sort of start to feel that Jerome Hughes is a more impactful player now on the way that he controls that structure. But if either of those two guys come out, then I think that's a massive out for that side. Then the other one is an interesting one because Teddy is one of the biggest players in the game, but then you can slot Joey Manu back into fullback, but then you're weakened in that centre spot. So that combination of Joey Manu and Tedesco would be another one that's certainly a massive line move, even though you've got good coverage in that spot, but you still need to fill the extra void of those players. So that'd be the five that come immediately to my mind.
I would also throw in there Mitch Moses, probably up there as well. And especially when they're a goal kicker too, as some of the guys are you mentioned. And you think about Munster, he would be on my list as well. I mean, we saw it in front of all our eyes when he was sensationally withdrawn from the Origin 3 team and how that line moved. Although in the end, you can argue how much he was worth because they played inspired Queensland, as you touched on before, and they won anyway. Barney has asked a question which has been covered before, so we can just touch on these pretty quick. How does TopSport monitor injury news and late outs? And he's also asking, extending on that, how do you determine the value of certain players?
Yeah, so we monitor Twitter and our news. We do nothing different to what you guys do, really. And it's just a case of trying to have your ear close to the ground, being aware of players that may or may not be potentially in or out. And then, having a value for each player that's both going out and then coming in. And the net difference is obviously how that affects the line. But it's a key one where if someone was expected out and they're officially ruled out, obviously the market doesn't move as far as someone that is in complete unexpected, which we had a bit this year. Like a lot of those COVID situations were completely left field, and they obviously cause the markets to move significantly. But yeah, we have no different intel to anyone else. We're monitoring Twitter. I find that a very good source. We're obviously keeping our eyes on news feeds, and yeah, we found the Munster information the same as everyone else when we had the Channel 9 news on the night it happened.
Jimmy Gore asks a question about your Titans, who you sponsor. There's a couple of questions about that. If this was the first season TopSport was sponsoring the Titans, you're getting four in next year. Do you think that makes them a top eight side?
Yeah, I'm probably a little bit biased in answering this question, but I certainly feel the Titans aren't that far away from being a decent side. I feel that the addition of Kieran Foran, but more importantly, from my point of view, I think Verrills is going to be the key that unlocks that team. I reckon he'll go close to one of the signings of the year if he stays injury-free. I think Kieran Foran will add that leadership and that cool head amongst a group of young kids that are ultra-talented. So I certainly think they're going to improve. I think they've got the core group of players there that can be a decent football side.
So that on the back of that question, Barney asks, your experience overall, how was it sponsoring the Titans and having the TopSport lounge there at Cbus Stadium?
Oh, it was a fantastic experience for us. You know, like I've got to give the back office of the Titans the biggest accolades. They're such a good team to work with. For them, it would have been an ultra hard season because the on the field, they unfortunately didn't get the job that I think they were expecting done. But yeah, we had a great relationship with them. It's been great for our brand to associate with a local team. For those who don't know us, our Robina office is literally a kilometre down the road from Cbus Stadium. So it just adds, you know, locally, it adds a lot of credibility to be aligned with the local NRL team. And yeah, like to have the lounge there, it's a great setup as you and a few of the boys found out, Jacob, again. And we love being associated with the club. Hopefully we can continue that association a long time into the future. So we're back there again next year. And we'll look to continue that relationship and that partnership. But from our perspective, we loved it. And the team off the field were second to none.
Well, if we're working together next year, I can tell the followers I'll try and twist Tristan's arm and organise a tripod day again next year and see if we can get more followers to experience that, because it was great day out at the TopSport Lounge there. Jeremy's asked a similar question: where you get your inside info, or do you pay for any like sources or have club contacts? So you've probably already addressed that you're just like any other punter out there getting information from the typical media sources. I guess this one's kind of out of the category, but Jeremy has asked, what advice would you give to people to improve their punting? Don't know if you want to give people that advice or not. Conflict of interest, maybe, but he's saying, like, you know, in terms of staking or specialization with you know, limited numbers of sports that you might punt on?
Yeah, I think it's just like anything, you know, like the best punters out there spend time, and you can't expect to just roll in and you know, do limited work and expect to win. It's a tough game, whether you're bookmaking or punting. You've got to be trying to secure the best price. You've got to be focused on what you do. You have to find the area of expertise in what you're really good at. And there's such a proliferation of bookmakers and markets out there now that you can really drill down and focus on one or two areas and be successful at it. So that'd be my advice. Be very structured in what you do. Make sure you have your limits and you have your staking plan in place. And when it inevitably goes pear-shaped, because it goes pear-shaped for everyone at various points over the course of a month, a year, a decade, make sure that that's when you don't chop your head off and pop the pumpkin on. And that's the biggest bit of advice that I can give to anyone. And I see it for yourself as well, Jacob. Like some of the people that come out of the woodworks when you're in the midst of a bad run, it's horrific to see. And everyone's out there trying their best, but it's trying to make sure that when you are in the midst of that bad run, that you go back to what you've done well. You make little tweaks, but you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. That's all. That's the biggest advice I can give to anyone, because that's when, you know, everyone, the best punters in the country, in the world, have bad runs. There's just no way of avoiding it. But it's making sure when that happens, you down stake a little bit, you wait till you find that confidence. And when you are riding that wave, that's when you can really play things up. So that's my biggest bit of advice. And to stay structured onto a couple of little areas that you can show discipline on.
I think that's very sage advice. Nick asked a couple of questions here. Why don't bookies ever offer the reverse of any time try scorer, like a player not to score? And he got answered in the question in the thread, but it's still worth addressing this one, because many people might not realize this. I didn't even know until about a year and a half ago. You do offer player try markets, and you can bet players, at least starting players, to score zero tries in a game, which is the inverse of any time try scorer. Do you take much action on those bets?
Yeah, you certainly do, and I think we might be one of the only ones that do offer that. So we
yeah, don't know anyone else who does.
Yeah, for the teams for the players that are not expected to score, but the shortest in the to score a try market, we do that for AFL as well, to score a goal. And it certainly adds a bit of integrity to your pricing, because you have to, you know, if you got a bloke up really short to score a try, if you think, well, that's too short, well, back zero tries. And that's something that we certainly take a lot more action on the to score a try market, but you certainly have a lot of punters sniffing around, particularly earlier in the week, or when a player's moving from the wing to the centre, or, you know, to a position where they're going to be less likely to score, rather than bet around that player in the to score a try market, they chime in for the zero tries. So you can back them, I think, at 0, 1, 2, or 3+. So it is a good little market, particularly in those low scoring games when obviously punters think that it might be a slugfest.
I've never bet that myself, but yeah, as you said, it's like 0, 1, 2. It's not 1+. It's like a player to score exactly one. That's got to be a funny one. I guess you've got to cheer for the guy to score, but then once he scores, the rest of the game, you're going to be cheering that he doesn't score again if you backed a specific number. Why don't most other bookies offer that? I think you hit it on the head there, that they can kind of disguise how big their edge is if they don't offer you the other side of the bet. So they can keep any player, you know, at any low price. If they're not letting you back the other side, they're not showing you what it should be. A good example I can think of is in 2020, a bookie, I won't name and shame the bookie, but a bookie was offering $1.90 on Buddy to kick his 1,000th goal in 2020. And so someone contacted them and said, can I back the no, Buddy won't kick his 1,000th goal in the year 2020? And Sportsman said, oh, okay. And then next thing you know, to kick a goal in 2020 was $2.70 and to not kick, $1.40. So when they were offering him to kick a goal, they offered you terrible odds, way unders. But once someone asked them for two-way market, they realized, hang on, we can't reflect this as a 50-50 because it's got a way lower chance than that, and we're going to offer the alternative. So a two-way market does keep the bookies more honest, I reckon. And another question from Nick, has any progress been made regarding live betting, not having to ring up to place a live bet?
No. And it's very frustrating because it's one of the most popular betting products in the UK. I'd actually had a meeting with our team that handle the in-play odds, who actually do it from overseas. And, you know, it's just such a popular market, and it's so convenient to be able to do it online or on your app, but that doesn't look like that's going to change, which it was brought in for responsible gambling reasons, which I can respect and I can completely agree with, but we've made so much progress in that space now that there's so many options there that surely for the amount of punters that might be negatively affected in that sense, we can look at protecting them in some sense there and open it up for the 90% of the people that are going to do so responsibly, that are going to get extra enjoyment, that are going to be more engaged in the game, that are going to generate more income for the sport. It would just be a game changer from us. But at the moment, I don't see anything on the horizon that sees that changing. And I would absolutely love it to. But unfortunately, I just can't see anything on the horizon that's going to change it.
Yeah, Nick, you had your answer. As soon as Tristan sighed before he started talking, you knew the answer there. Ben Williamson asked about the evolution of player performance markets. This was something new that you were able to wheel out in 2022. And he said, you started with offering a bunch of players to score 40+, 50+, and a variety of combination markets which were taken away and then put back for bigger games. Will the markets be back next year and more consistent with the amount of markets on offer? How was your experience with this one? It had to be a tricky one because it was something new, and there's plenty of sharp people out there like Ben Willey picking off the best value ones.
Yeah, for sure. It was a unique market. We were very keen to get it out, and we'd been talking to the team at the NRL for a long time about getting something in place, which we came up with this player performance market, because you can't bet individual stat markets because of the perception of integrity. So we rolled this market out. It was unique, and it was absolutely smashed. Punters loved it. They absolutely loved betting into that market. I can tell Ben that it was our least profitable market out of every market we offered on the NRL. It was by far and away our biggest losing option. So, and the reality with it was that, unfortunately, because we only got the word a week before the season commenced, we weren't able to integrate it in with our NRL model, which obviously, you know, we did have a lot of those extra markets up that you were saying, where you could back player A and player B, V, player C and player D. Unfortunately, they were all manual-based markets. So when you lay one option, we'd, you know, where one was priced incorrectly, we might take four or five like bets. So from our perspective, what we need to go away in the off-season, go back to the drawing board, get it into that model, make sure that when we do lay one bet where it's sharp, we can affect all of the related markets. So to answer your question, I don't know where that's going to sit in the next season. We obviously need to do something differently from our end, because it wasn't very successful and it was a new one. So we're going to put a lot of time and resources into improving it. If we can get it into that model, then we will certainly be able to have a consistent offering and also have your more expanded set. But until that happens, then we're going to have to sort of play it in a similar sort of vein to what we did there, where you know, because ultimately it's a difficult one to get the true pricing of it when a lot of the others don't have a lot of liquidity there either.
And then you get news through the week that players in or out or players moving to the bench. And I'll share my experience. So I had Cam Murray under player performance for Origin 1. If people recall, he got picked off a very minimal game time because he had a shoulder injury, and I didn't think he'd get many minutes in Origin 1. And then it turned out to be a great bet because Cam Murray didn't even start. But then what happened? First tackle of the game, Isaiah Yeo knocked out. Murray comes in at lock, but not to fear, goes off, still doesn't play big minutes. I think I'm going to hit my unders. Comes back on second half, scores a try, goes over. But that's the excitement of the player props, but I definitely can appreciate that will be a challenging one. Another option that I don't know if you can bring back is a question from Mark asking, can you allow punters to back 40-20s in the NRL? Does that come under the integrity issue?
Yeah, and we actually had that question posed to us with another site we support where they wanted to do a bingo, and that was one of the options in there. And I've got to investigate that in the off-season because I can't remember if it was one that we actively pulled ourselves. I don't think that would be the case. I think it might be one that it comes under the Integrity Act where it's a singular stat market, and as a result, you can't have that yes-no option. I think it's more so the perception of things. And I've been having some really good conversations with the guys there because I think when it's all out in the open and you got the markets on the site, the integrity concern shouldn't be there, because you can, if there was a big plunge for a 40-20 and someone kicked one, you know, they've got all the records.
Especially but if it looks dodgy when you watch the game and the fullback could have got to it, you know, because it's hard to really do it deliberately or deliberately concede one. Liam asked, is it true that NRL Lions will be paying 15% juice next season? That'd be another way of saying 115% markets. If so, do you think this will be the norm across all books?
I think that's very extreme, because that would be $1.74 line. I don't think we'll ever get to that point. We bet $1.93.
He might mean like $1.85 each side, and he may be mistakenly calling that 15%.
Yeah, right. So maybe. $1.85 lines are 8% margin. So I don't necessarily think that that's going to occur either. You know, from our perspective, we offered $1.90 lines early in the week and then elevated it to $1.93 in the last hour. We've got to review all of that, because, you know, you're betting 3% margin. Like, I know people see that and you say, oh, $1.93, that's 7% in the bookie's favour, but it's not. It's 3%. And when we're paying roughly 2.5% in net tax on the game, you can sort of understand that it's very difficult to maintain that level of offering. The other issue you've got to realise is that when the big games come around, we actually then get charged at a higher rate. So, no, there won't be $1.85 lines, but we are probably going to have to review that and maybe go back to your $1.91 or maybe $1.90 late. We're just going to review everything. I'm not jumping to anything. I'm not putting any finalities on to anything at the moment, but certainly $1.85 won't be happening.
Okay, we're going to jump to, this isn't NRL, but it's rugby union. And then Liam had a part two of his question, but that'll feed into the next topic. Chris asked, why'd you get rid of 1 to 14 and 1 to 21 markets for rugby union? And I wonder if you could also touch on the issues with our Super Rugby and like Wallabies games as well, that people might be curious about the absence of this year.
Yeah, we're still in, I'd say, one-way discussions with Rugby Australia. It's very difficult to get an answer there. They won't allow us to offer the product at the moment for a variety of reasons, and it's frustrating, and I think it's very short-sighted, because I think that we offer a different opportunity for punters to get set on their product, but at the moment we're not able to offer rugby until we get that ratified by Rugby Australia, and I don't know when that's going to occur. I've answered every question that's come to me, and it just seems like there's no further responses coming at the moment. So I'm not sure where that will end up. I can't preempt that. I can't, you know, and that's the frustrating thing. I would love to say, despite the issues that we've had with, and which we'll touch on, with the taxations and the variety of different, you know, fee structures in the industry, both sport and racing, I feel like I've got a really strong relationship with virtually every other racing and sporting body in the land, and at least I can give constructive feedback, whether they take it on board or not. It's always very amicable, and there's never any, you know, like, it's just people having a different point of view, but at least we can express that. Where rugby, we just don't have that relationship for whatever reason, and I don't know why, and it's frustrating, like, for you guys not being able to bet. At least, you know, I say this with, you know, with transparency, at least you can bet elsewhere. We can't put a market up. You got no idea how frustrating it is when you've got a Wallabies against an All Blacks game, and we literally can't put a market up when everyone else can. And I feel we're acting well within the framework of what we're required to do. So, it is what it is at the moment. We're still continuing those talks, and hopefully by the time Super Rugby rolls around next season, that it'll be a different answer. In terms of reviewing those couple of markets, we have done a review of a lot of our markets across a wide variety of sport, and it's continuing. And we just felt that, you know, we've got a margin, which is the popular margin of 1 to 12, and then we had 1 to 14 and 1 to 21, and which we'll touch on later. We're in the process of trying to reduce turnover, and by having those three markets up, we were generating unnecessary extra turnover on what is a very, very similar market to, you know, to the 1 to 12. So we're just in the process of removing a number of those duplicate markets, because it just meant that when we were slightly off on those markets, we were getting hit three times instead of one. So it's one of the measures we put in place. The vast majority of markets will remain, but anything that we find is too dependent or too similar to any other markets, we've made a move to remove a few of those off the site.
Does that mean you just need them to be integrated with each other? Because like a lot of markets are all derivatives of each other, but if they all move in unison, I wouldn't imagine you'd get more turnover by offering more markets because people are still going to back one or the other. I can understand what you said about player performance when you had the combos and the head-to-heads, that if they're not moving in sync, then people are going to be able to exploit, inefficiencies. But Is that what you mean with the...
It's where if we've got a price at $3 on year 1 to 12, we'll get multiple customers that will bet simultaneously on all three markets at once before we've got the opportunity to move them. So, yeah, there's certainly no drama with moving, but it's just that...
Okay, it's a way to magnify their max bet by backing derivative markets. Okay, it makes sense. Let's move to some questions about promos, cap stake, fair use policy. And Liam, this will go back to Liam's part two. I should say as well, thanks for answering that rugby question. That might have been news to some people who might have thought it was your choice not to offer, but you've explained there that you're fighting to get the ability to offer those again. So Liam's next question was, as Toppy is considered a sharp bookie, what incentive do we have to bet with you? Top up tokens pretty much revoked, he says personally. Reward points next to non-existent. And limits heavily reduced. So your response to that?
Yeah, so my response to that, it's all tied in with the issues we're going to talk about at a later in a later segment with the onerous fees that are placed on the marketplace at the moment. And unfortunately, we're in the process that we've got to try to reduce our turnover. We've got to try to cut it in half. And unfortunately, we pay on the vast majority of sports and racing in particular, you pay based on a turnover tax, which we as much as we'd like to, I would love nothing more than to be fighting one-on-one with customers and if you beat us, you beat us. And I've always had that mentality, but unfortunately, it's becoming harder and harder and harder. And you can have a customer that loses it 15% on turnover, a customer that wins at 15% on turnover, and on the vast majority of cases, you're paying the same fee structure to the racing or the sporting body on those winning customers, which just doesn't make sense. And as a result, we've just got to try to really rationalise our turnover. We've got to try to reduce it, and as a result, the tokens and the promos and these things that we've had in place, they're just not conducive to being able to bet profitable margins, unfortunately, in the current landscape. And we had a number of syndicates came through with the rewards program in particular. That was a very costly element, and it was unfortunately a case of a few people ruin that for everyone, which is a sad state of affairs. The top up tokens, unfortunately, we have had to make a few changes in that space. But I still feel that at least we do give everyone, as long as you're complying with the fair play rules, some element of bonus along the way. But obviously, from our end, with our fair play rules, we expect a 50-50 level of turnover. And I've seen a few of the comments in the group, and I'll answer this in an overarching fashion. Like, if we give someone a warning and we say, okay, this is the parameters, this is where you're at, and then we add the promos back on, like we have in every instance, and then you come back and you abuse the promos again, you've had your chance, you've had your warning, and you go and do it again, I don't know what you expect from us. We've been very fair in the first place to allow the promos back, and then when it gets removed again, or when you can tell that there's people rolling through multiple accounts and people that are actively going and just opening up new accounts purely to take advantage of the promos, they're the one that I don't think that those type of scenarios deserve any sympathy. And if I'm wrong in any of those scenarios, and I'm happy to be pointed out, all the emails come from me. Everyone can respond to me personally and I don't think I miss any. A couple have sometimes gone to junk, which maybe I miss, but send support. Ask them to say, I'll send an email to Tristan, you haven't responded, because I respond to every one of them personally. We take great pride in doing that. But, what you guys have got to understand is that these promos, they're there for everyone, and people that are abusing them and actively going out of their way to rort the system or to not bet inside the fair, it's hurting everyone on here. And everyone is then, you can see the only option we had with the rewards was to pull it for everyone. And when people are going out of their way to circumnavigate the rules that we have in place, which I think are very, very fair, everyone ends up worse off. So that's what I'm saying, you know. And if you get on there and you complain or you try to garner some support, like, it's not going to happen, because ultimately we feel we're acting very, very fairly in who we do and who we don't offer the promos to. And if you're not getting them, there's a reason. And feel free to reach out directly to me, and I'm happy to explain it directly to you. No problems. But yeah, that's our stance on it. In terms of the low margin customers, trying to keep them and give you an incentive to bet with us. Like, Liam, you know, our incentive is that we still let people on. Yeah, the limits may have reduced in some sports, but they've only reduced on the smaller tier sports. You know, like, you can't expect to get the same limit on a NPC rugby game than what you're going to get in the last hour of a rugby league game. I feel our limits, despite the changes we've been forced to make, which we'll go into more detail later, I've got no doubt that our limits are bigger and better than anyone out there still in the marketplace. We're very, very fair in that regard. You know, some of the biggest bookmakers in the world overseas have $100 limits on some of these small basketball games and small rugby games, and they're as known as the pinnacle of wagering around the world. And we're still betting more than them, even after we've made these changes. So ultimately, you'll understand as we get deeper into this discussion, it's a change we've been forced to make. It's certainly not something we've wanted to do, but we've got no option, no alternative. And until the landscape changes, then unfortunately, that's just the nature of the beast and where we're currently sitting, which is a sad state of affairs.
And again, I appreciate you explaining it. And any time, you know, you guys have made a change or whatever, I also get people contacting me, and then I want to be able to understand the decision making behind that change. And you've always explained it to me. And I think a couple of the main reasons why there have been changes that have taken away appeal to punters has been one of two things: either the fees and the costs and the structure is prohibitive, and ultimately it's not viable to keep offering, or there's an exploitation factor where there's been groups of people that have mobilized to take advantage of certain things like generating reward points by depositing, whatever it is, systematically. And those are the people you're saying that are spoiling it for everyone else, or a group that doesn't even punt, but somehow 300 accounts all open at the same time to all max bet the mixed matchup or whatever. So when you say, you know, there's people out there rorting, there's going to be people listening and watching this and say, well, I've had my promos taken away, but I'm not a rorter. Like, yeah, I backed the mixed matchup here and there. Yeah, when I had a bet, I pressed top up and then that became promo turn up. So look, I think it's not a case of accusing, like, it's not a case of saying every person that's had promos taken away, you're doing necessarily the wrong thing, but it's just more those people need to understand why the rules are in place and why you're kind of forced to enforce them.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll touch on that aspect next. And I think, like, the point I was making at the outset is that the vast majority of people, when I send that initial email out, which, hey, your turnover is X and Y, and 90% of people come back and say, I didn't realise it was so imbalanced. Thanks for letting me know. I'll reach back out, and then they reach back out and they've turned over a significant amount more, and we pop it back on and there's never an issue ever again. And they understand it, and we're very transparent in that. I guess, you know, we see a lot of syndicates on the other side that you take the promos off them, they turn over the minimum to get it back, and then they just revert back into the old habits, which is frustrating from my end, and it's hurting everyone else. But yeah, we'd love to be doing things a lot differently, but as we'll touch on, you'll see with the way the fees is shaped, we got no option at the moment, and we've got to enforce those same rules for everyone. I think we're very fair, we're very transparent, and the reality is, if you send me an email, I'll respond to it, and I have done it for many years, there's no dramas in that sense.
Look, there's a couple more questions to do with cap stakes, promos, right, which I want to throw at you, but I almost feel, you tell me, does it make sense to jump into the industry changes and the cost of operating first, because that might actually help explain, the follow-on effect that leads to your decision-making with promos. Does that make sense? We go to that? Okay, so let's go to that topic. So there's a few questions about that. So let's go to Kieran's question here. He asks, the necessary changes you've made to your operating model recently to remain viable, such as reducing turnover, some market offerings, are these mostly related to racing? And I can say, you know, you used to offer best of the best, right? You had to take that away this spring, regrettably. Best tote for place bets on certain metro carnivals. You can mention any other changes that come to mind. But he's asking, is this mostly related to racing, or will there be sports-related changes as well?
Yeah, so basically in a nutshell, the fees we pay are based on racing, based on the Aussie sports. You've got point of consumption, which is an overarching feature where you pay a fee based on where the bet's struck by where the customer lives. And I think that's been the tip of the iceberg moment, because a lot of the point of consumptions have changed significantly in the last 3 months. New South Wales, for example, went from 10% to 15%, which is a 50% increase, basically with a week's notice. Queensland have gone from 15% to 20%, but there's a bonus bet element in there, which has basically seen that double. And that's doesn't kick in until the 1st of January, and they've at least given us the option to reassess and refine our model. So from our end, those fees apply to racing and sport, and they're significant. The racing side of things, obviously, we're in the middle of spring, or getting to the start of spring, should I say, where they're the most pronounced, and there's a large amount that is tied to racing, the racing fee structures. Now, the reality is there's a lot more margin in a race, in a horse race, than there is in a sporting event. As I touched on, we were betting three and a bit percent markets on your league lines, which doesn't give you much wiggle room. And when you get the net average of that, it comes down to probably about a 2% expected margin when you've got to move bets based on the sharp activity. And from an NRL perspective, you pay a percentage of turnover or revenue based on if you've made more or less over the course of a month. You pay more on multis, you pay more on some child markets. So there's a whole element there. It's a very confusing structure, but the reality of the scenario is that over the course of the last 2 or 3 years, these fees are slowly getting higher and higher and higher. And we've got to the tipping point now where we haven't been able to maintain the same level of products as what we did 2 or 3 years ago because of the way the fees are structured. To put it in layman's terms, we had our biggest ever gross year in terms of gross margin we received off our customers, and we've had our worst ever net year on the same basis. So we've made more money off customers this year, and we've had a losing year. We've only won on 1 month out of the last 12 on a net basis. And that's, I hope, a reality check for people out there to understand that despite, I feel, us bookmaking better than we've ever done, it's impossible in the marketplace now. And I'm sure you guys can understand that you can't run a business where you're paying out more tax than you are getting receipts in, and things have to change on the back of that because you just can't continue to do that on an ongoing basis. So they're the decisions we've had to make. From a racing point of view, we've pulled a number of products. We've pulled our best of the best product. We've pulled our best hope place offering. We've made a number of couple of subtle changes. We've increased our margin a little bit. All of these things are areas that we didn't and wouldn't do if the taxation structure wasn't the way it is. But unfortunately, that's the nature of the beast. That's the nature of the landscape at the moment, and we've been forced into making those decisions to try to be viable going forward. And on a sport basis, we are going to make a few changes in that sense as well. We're just going to have to pull back our margin a little bit on some of the smaller sports. We've always been very proud of saying that we're happy to bet everyone to win 500, but on these smaller sports, I think people can appreciate that a Lithuanian basketball game is a hell of a lot different to an NRL. And we always had those difference in distinctions in limits, but we are changing where we always, for even the smaller events, 500 minimum, we're dropping that to 250 in some instances because it's just the marketplace just isn't there anymore. It's changed. We were betting $1.90, take your pick on a lot of these games, and you look around at the marketplace and it's $1.83, take your pick everywhere else. And even some of those real big bookies overseas, as I touched on. So we've just got to put ourselves into a position which is comparable to the rest of the marketplace, and you know, we've fought this pretty hard for as long as we can, but at some point we've had to make a change based on the environment that we're currently in. And as soon as that environment switches back to a point where we can re-offer these products again, then we certainly will. But you know, and don't worry, we're fighting just as hard to try to get those changes to be made, because the point, and the only way I feel anyone is going to listen, is we've got to try to drop our turnover from 1.2 billion a year to 600 million a year. Now, what business in the world spends the amount of money we've done over the last 2 years to try to grow our brand, to try to grow our business, and then we have to make the decision and the realization that that's our only option we've got, is to try to cut our turnover in half. And it's not something I want to do. It's certainly something that we don't want to have to do, but it's our only choice. And that's just the nature of the beast. That's the marketplace out there at the moment thinks that people betting into the industry, they're turning into a poker machine, which is sad, and it's something that I completely stand against. But we just can't continue to be the only one standing up and not changing our model. We've had to do it, and it's one of those ones where it's a sad thing to do, but it's something that we've got no alternative.
Yeah, it's genuinely disappointing to hear, and I've chatted to you about some of this stuff before, and it does feel like some elements of the system are broken, or rules are made without a full understanding of the repercussions and who ends up paying the price, and often it has to get passed back down to the punters. I also had a response to what Liam said before, ultimately, when he said, why should people bet with TopSport? It's like the same reason why you should bet with any bookie. I mean, just bet with TopSport when the bet that you want to make, when they've got the best odds available, or equal best odds, if you think it's more in your benefit to use put the turnover through Toppy, or if you've got more confidence that you're going to be able to get more on with Toppy. I mean, obviously, if another bookie lets you get on for more and better odds, there's no discussion. So, I guess, yeah, Tristan, you're trying to be as appealing to customers as you can be, but if it's not possible for you to offer certain extra incentives for people to punt, then you understand the result of that is going to be people will look elsewhere. And you said you unfortunately are actively going to have to reduce your turnover. So that's going to be the result. Kieran asked as well, just if any come off the top of your head, Tristan, are there certain sports with like higher fees than others?
The NRL and the AFL are pretty consistent. They've had the same structure in place for a while. From our point of view, they're expensive because we run a low margin product, but they've had the goalposts in place there for a while. So we are going to have to address how we operate on those sports going forward. The cricket is a concern because there's a potential change in the way the fees are going to be levied this year, which for our business will be, in essence, quadrupling the fees that we paid last year. And I'm sure people can understand if that comes through, then we're going to have to significantly change our cricket offering. A lot of the overseas sports, there's minimal fees, and that's why you'll see the likes of the NBA and the NFL and the MLB and these top-tier products, we're able to continue to bet our $1.92 lines. We're able to continue to bet really, really high limits on those markets. Obviously, we still have to pay the point of consumption tax, but you won't notice any significant changes in those top-tier sports. The smaller sports don't have the fees. That's more of a case of, we just need to create a distinction between the top tier sports and the lower tier sports where we've been out of step with the marketplace. So in terms of answering your questions, the Aussie sports are really the ones that are of concern, and we just have to be realistic. If we're being charged, around about that 2%, 2.5% mark, we can't be betting, $1.93 lines anymore. It just doesn't work. You guys can do the maths. You're probably all smarter than me at that side of it, and we've probably held onto it for a touch too long. So, and it's just the nature of the beast. We were offering those prices well before the product fees came in. We tried to continue to do it. We've fought as long as we could, and now we just need to just wind things back a little bit just to try to take that margin away to absorb those fees.
Well, I'll just finish off Kieran's question here where he said, many thanks, Tristan. Your insight is invaluable. The way you run your bookie is admirable and much appreciated by punters nationwide. Hopefully you can continue a strong relationship well into the future. So that's a nice way for Kieran to sign off. Okay, Siebes asks, as a business, and this kind of ties into your profit margin, what kind of margin do you aim to make per event? Or for example, a horse race or a 50-50 line or a head-to-head, whatever it is, do you have a goal profit margin you're trying to get?
Our goal profit margin is a lot different to, I would suggest, what's out there in the industry. So basically, in a nutshell, to give people a realistic understanding of what you need to do to break square, you really need a customer to generate a margin of 7.5% now for that customer to be break even. And that's a very hard thing to do. And I think that's way too high, personally. I think that for a customer to have to generate a margin of 7.5% is not on.
Clarify, does that mean that someone's getting 92.50 for every 100 they're betting?
Yeah, correct. Right. Yeah. So for every every $100 they turn over, they get a return of $92.50. And
that's break even.
Break even.
Because
that's
of all the fees associated. Yep.
So 5 years ago, if we had a customer that would turn over 100 and get back 95, they were a great customer from our point of view. They were someone that was responsible in their punting. They were someone that was sustainable. They were having a lot of fun in doing it. But now a customer that generates a margin of 5% is an unprofitable customer under the landscape, which is terrifying, which is horrible, and that's the cause of the reality of the changes we've had to make. So in terms of we need to try to make around about the 10% margin on racing, and we need to try to make around about the 5 to 6% margin on sport to break even. And you know, it's a difficult thing to do, but that's just the way the fees are structured, because you have a multitude of different ways in which they're calculated. They're calculated so that they're higher over the peak periods, which I can understand the rationale behind that. I can also not agree with that, because ultimately in those periods you're turning over more money anyway. And from my perspective, they're your flagship events. They're the ones that you want to be able to offer better prices, more attractive prices, get people engage, get people tuning into a rugby league game and getting a great bet, getting an option where they're getting good value and they enjoy it and they'll continue to bet on rugby league throughout the course of the year. On the racing side of things, you want them to be betting on the Melbourne Cup, and obviously they will, but then your lesser likes, like your Cox Plate, these races, being able to offer really attractive prices and products for punters to get involved, so that then they might chime in on the Monday at Barnsdale. But on what we've had to do, we've had to pull our premium products off our premium races, and that to me is an absolute no-no. But that's the reality because of the way the fees are levied.
And this kind of ties into non-profitable customers. Hamish asks, do you ever regret the decision of not banning punters who win large amounts of money from you? And do you ever get nervous when you see some big bets coming in?
I certainly don't regret not banning customers. Like, If you got to ban customers, you're not bookmaking, you know, like, and I'm not going to sit here and say we take everyone's bet every time. I've never, ever said that. Even before all of these fees got out of control, when we first started our relationship, Jacob, you know, I was very clear in that instance that we don't take everyone's bet to the amount that they want all the time. And I think people can respect that. All we've ever done is bet fair limits. Now, to switch customers off certain markets or certain bet types or that, like, I'm a firm believer, and we are still in that. Even these changes we've made, we certainly have never closed down an account for profitability reasons. Yeah, we've limited customers, and we've always done that, and we've had to amplify those numbers in recent times. But you know, I still feel those limits for those sharp customers are bigger and better than anywhere else in the marketplace. I still truly believe that, where people can bet in their own name and not have to go through the back door and know that they're still going to get a fair bet. And to answer Hamish's question, you know, like, ultimately you're bookmaking, you're putting a position up on the board, and you can't have a market up on your site where some customers can get access to it and other customers can't. And that's something I fully believe in. Our product range, it would have been very easy for us to pull best of the best for 50% of our client base and give it to the other 50%. That would have been a very easy option. That's certainly not what I wanted to do, and it doesn't create the impact. You know, we're still very, very fair. We've said this product isn't viable for our whole database. We could have offered it to some people and continue to do it, and we haven't. And that's something that, you know, something I continue to stand for, and that's where we need to be able to offer these prices for everyone. We've had to reduce our margin on a number of sports. That's for everyone, and that is, I hope people can understand that. Obviously, the people that are asking these questions are on the sharper side of the scale, and but you know, you can see what we're doing. We're not doing it because we want to. We're doing it because we've been forced to. And then, do I get nervous when big bets fly on the screen? Yeah, but I get excited by it as well. There's nothing more enjoyable. Like, I'm a punter at heart. I've been involved in the game for 15 years, and you love action. You want to watch a game where you've got a big swing on an NFL game or a cricket game or an NRL game, and that's something I want to continue to always have. But the reality is, at the moment, you've got to pay X amount out before that swing even takes place, and that's the sad thing about it. That you know, we'd love to be trying to double our turnover this year, but it just doesn't work, and I just don't understand the mentality behind it. But that's a scenario we're in. So to answer your question, no, I don't regret not closing people down. And B, I get a little bit nervous, but I get more excited when the big bet flashes across the screen.
And I can vouch for you as well that, like, you are fair to a fault because you are treating everyone the same. Sometimes that's why sometimes some people exploiting things ruins it for everyone else, because everyone gets treated the same way. And no one has ever had their top-up button, you know, reduced or not been able to get on cap stakes. And when they've emailed you and said, why not? No one has been told because you're winning too much. It's always comes back to because you're being judged by the exact same rules as everyone else, which is, you know, turnover ratio, which we'll get to. But let's talk more about the industry. And these, I'm going to put this graphic on the screen to give people an idea. This is a customer that puts in $100 on a given Saturday race day. And depending on whether or not the bookmaker is under the 5 million annual racing turnover bracket for that state, there are vastly different tax implications. And 5 million in one state for a whole year is your smaller bookies, fair to say. And Top Sport is well above that. So you're in the higher bracket of tax, but you're still not operating on the scale of the biggest bookies out there that people know of, that have the advantage of the massive scale of turnover, as well as maybe being more selective with who they let have a bet. So you're in that worst scenario, that you're paying the highest tax rates, but you don't have the most profitable business model. And to show an example of the extremes, if you are under that threshold and someone had $100 on a race day, and in this example, they have a good day, they come back the next week and they proceed to lose. Someone would look at that on face value and said, well, they've put 100 in, they've ultimately lost it, so that should be good for you. That punter, you will end up paying $21 in tax, so you'll still make $79 off what they deposited ultimately. But if you're over the threshold, you will pay $157 in tax, which is pretty crazy when you consider that's a punter that put in 100 and lost it, is going to cost you 157. And it's not as if every punter loses every deposit that they put in as well. So that right there kind of probably highlights that there's something wrong with the system.
Yeah, exactly. And so a couple of things that just to reiterate your point. So basically, someone's put in 100, bet over 2 days, got their balance up and then lost it, turning over a total of 2,100. So they've lost it 5%. Under threshold model, they pay $21 in fees. Under our, when you're above threshold, assuming they're your only customer, and you know, that's a big assumption, but it's basically saying if you win and lose on a given day, which for our business model happens a lot where there is variance involved because we run at that lower margin, you pay 157 on the 100. Now, that's a customer that's losing at 5%, which I touched on, used to be a great customer. Now they're not, as you can see. Now, we haven't that's our product fee and our point of consumption tax. We've then got to pay our staff. We've got to pay our electricity. We've got to pay everything else that goes along with it. So I want to also be very, very clear that I'm not saying that these smaller bookmakers are getting an unfair advantage in that sense and that I disagree with it. I think that the smaller bookmakers absolutely need to be of that benefit, and they need to be given an advantage against the bookmakers at scale. The big problem and the big flaw is that when you are under that threshold and you turn $1 over that threshold, you go from being in a very fair taxation bracket to being in an immensely unfair taxation bracket. And as you touched on, we haven't got the benefits of scale of the bigger operations. You look at a tax system, everyone pays income tax, and there's 5 or 6 thresholds. That is a very, very, very easy solution, because I'm not just saying this to whinge from our point of view and to explain the differences, but you need to have an industry where, as a bookmaker, you're not trying to stay under the threshold. And that's what all of the smaller bookmakers are doing, because they can see the danger. If they get above that threshold, they know it goes from being a viable business to being a very, very difficult business, and in some senses an impossible one. We've done our absolute best to try to grow over the last 2 years. We've put a lot of money into marketing, into promotion to try to grow our brand. And we're still so far away from the scalability of these bigger companies that a lot, and I feel we bookmake in a manner that is if not one of the strongest in the country. It's right up there in the top few, and we cannot even get close to making it work under the model. So there just needs to be a number of different thresholds in place so that you're encouraged to continue to grow your brand, and that's better for everyone. And I think it's an easy change, and I think it solves everything. And I know that there are potentially a couple out there that may think of that, but it just can't be a case of you go from turning over under to over, and you go from being in a vibrant marketplace to being in one that's where does that incentivize anyone trying to grow their business? And that's the million-dollar question. That's the answer that needs to be resolved. And that, as you can see, that example, it goes from $21 to $157. It's too big a difference. And when you've got that benefit of scale, it's unlikely you're going to have an instance where you're winning and losing on those given days, because you've got so many customers which shelter that. But for us, you put a couple of zeros onto the end of that, where you've got a really sizable customer that has a big winning day on one day, and he decides to go out for dinner. Hey, I've had a good day, I'm going to go. And then maybe he pulls the money out, then he redeposits it the next Saturday. That happens all the time. And you know, you add zeros onto those numbers and you can see how out of control it gets. And that's the impact. That's why we have to actively try to reduce our turnover. I know we're not going to get close to those thresholds, but we need to find a way to smooth out that variance, because at the moment we can't afford to have winning and losing days, because that's where the danger, and it happens with the NRL as well, because you pay on the higher of revenue or turnover over a monthly basis. And if you have one big winning month and one bad losing month, you're in a horrible position. And that's the problem with a cricket model, where they're trying to bring it in. They're trying to go from a month-to-month basis, which is somewhat fair, to a match-by-match basis. And if that comes in, that completely changes our whole business model on cricket. And unfortunately, I can see the writing on the wall there, and we're having to preempt a few things.
So that's the key point that I think just sounds wrong, and that seems to be the big issue, that you're paying tax in two different ways. If you're winning and if you're actually making profit, they want tax on that profit. Now, that sounds fair in itself. But when you're losing, you're still paying tax on turnover. So you're getting hit either way. And I guess the analogy there about how the thresholds just don't seem to work, to me, it sounds like you can have a choice of having a yearly salary of under $80,000 a year, and you're going to get a super low tax rate for the whole amount. Or if you go a dollar over $80,000, suddenly your whole salary would be subject to a really massive tax bracket. Well, nobody would want the higher salary. It's actually like counterintuitive, that the higher salary, which should be better and should incentivize people to want to work harder, or you know, get a higher paying job or whatever. But if it's just a flat rate based on what tier you're ultimately in, not thresholds as you work the way up, then you're disincentivized to go higher. And that just seems like a big problem. Is there any other points you wanted to make on that topic before we tackle more questions? Like, you've touched on a bit there, but like changes you've lobbied for, how would you solve it?
Yeah, well, like for me, I want to stress that this isn't us whinging or complaining or whatever. Like, this is us saying we've got to make this move to be viable under the landscape, and that is affecting a large group of customers. And that, I guess, is the thing I want to continue to stress, that I've done this for 15 years. I don't want to be doing this, but I can't do it anymore. Like, that's just the reality. And the thing that I want to stress is that by doing these changes we're making, it's affecting us negatively. We're reducing our turnover. It's affecting the punters negatively, because there's going to be less people that can get on. And it's affecting the industry negatively, because they're going to end up getting less fees out of us at the end of the day. So everyone's in a worse position. Like, how does that make sense to anyone? And that's the fundamental issue that I'm trying to raise. I've been lobbying for different thresholds. Like, you can't have it where you go from $1 over, all of a sudden it's horrible. There just needs to be five or six thresholds so that everyone's in the same boat. Everyone knows what the goalposts are. And you've got a bookmaker there that's turning over their 4 million and says, hey, I'm actually going to try to turn over 10 million this year. I'm going to do some things which are going to spice things up. I'm going to try to get more customers. I'm going to offer more incentives here to grow my turnover, because I know that, okay, the difference between 5 to 10 million is only an extra X amount, and I can still work with that. And that, when you can do that, and you can get these 80 or 95 bookmakers that have popped up, that are all, the 90% of them are trying to stay under the threshold at the moment. If you can get half of them wanting to try to go up to the next threshold. That's when turnover really increases. That's when the marketplace comes alive. And that's when the whole industry is better off on the back of it, and punters are better off on the back. Competitiveness drives competitiveness. At the moment, we're trying to be anti-competitive, and that's just doesn't make sense. So that's the point I'm trying to make. I hope you guys can see and you can understand it, that when you look at those numbers, someone losing $100 over $2,100 turnover over 2 days and we're paying $157, it just doesn't make sense. And I would struggle to find anyone that can make sense of it. And unfortunately, the reality is a lot of these decisions are made off the, you know, the really big bookmakers that do run at high margins. And unfortunately, we're not all in that boat. And you know, there just needs to be a difference in how it's levied.
Another analogy I've got, and you can tell me if this is kind of accurate, you might have like a stadium, or the regulators or the industry wants to generate more revenue out of this stadium and says, you're doing well, we're going to make you triple the price of your tickets and triple the price of your food and drink. And what they don't seem to understand is if you do all these things, you don't get a lot more money because you're going to turn people away, and you're not going to just magnify the amount of money you get out of somebody if people stop going and people stop using that service. And the equivalent in betting is if turnover reduces, then their goal to try and get more money out of you by increasing the fees is going to be undermined, because the turnover has to be reduced for you to survive.
And the reality is there's a group of people that are disadvantaged, the low margin customers that are the ones disadvantaged most out of this. And they need to be the champions of the sport. If people are out there able to win on racing, and if people are out there able to win on sport betting, these are the guys that should be up in lights. The industry should be, you know, really campaigning to keep them in the game, because you get more people. If you're a Tigers fan, and sorry for all the Tigers fans out there, but if you're a Tigers fan, are you going to watch a Canberra v Newcastle game unless you've had a bet on it? Maybe not. And if you've got the ability to have a wager, if you've got a smart punter that's tipping, and all of these people are going to be forced out of the industry, because by us having to drop our margin, it's going to affect everyone. And all of a sudden, certain people are going to be squeezed out. And that's the thing that, and it's difficult to turn that around. You know, like we've had a lot of customers, oh, you pull best the best, I'm not going to wager with you anymore on a Saturday. Well, I'm sorry about that, but that's the reality we're in. Now, you can't just add the product back on and these guys come flocking back in. You know, once the horse bolts and you've left the door open, they're gone, and they might be gone for a long period of time. And I'm conscious of that when we made the decisions we made. And that's why it's taken us so long to get to this point. And we've done everything in our power to try to get the word out there in a very respectful way to a number of the racing bodies. And yeah, some of them are listening. Some of them aren't. Some of them care. Some of them don't care. Some of them have their hands tied behind their back. I know everything. I know it's not an easy solution, but when people go, they just don't come back the next day when you bring everything back. And then whilst I guarantee you, if we can get a result and we can get some significant improvement in this sense, we are going to roll back the vast majority of these products. Your turnover doesn't go from X to Y back to X again the next day. It takes time, and it's going to be a slow burn. So, yeah, it's an interesting time for sure.
Poor old West Tigers catching a few strays, not just from this pod, but just in the news recently. Let's jump back, because I think of what we've covered there gives a good background back into the specific questions that are being asked about. Well, in a tripod group, the question comes up about the mixed matchup. That's certainly been a big topic of discussion.
And that's where we're going to have to wrap tonight's episode. Sorry, guys. So just 24 hours time, you'll get another 45 minutes worth of questions. There were plenty more great ones that Tristan tackled, but I hope that people did enjoy that and get a bit out of that chat so far. And let us know what you think. Any questions you want, you know, further explained, or I can pass it on to Tristan, or I can help explain better myself in the comments as well. Appreciate you tuning in. As always, I'm also going to add my own reflections and review of the 2022 Tripod NRL season and talk about our results as well on the back end of tomorrow night's show, which you can look forward to, tomorrow being Thursday. But thanks for tuning in. Appreciate it, guys. And catch you in 24 hours. Lego.